Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. My guest is Bjorn Englund, who's a great bass player. He's played with Quiet Riot, Yngwie Malmsteen, Dio's Disciples, and he has his own band, Soul Sign, and he also plays with another band, Black Welder. Bjorn, it's great to have you on the show. It's really an honor to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let me get your level up a little bit. There you go. Before I start talking with him directly, I'm going to play a clip to kind of show what he's about. This is a solo from Soul Sign, the band Soul Sign. This is called Between the Lines. Let me play that, and that'll kind of set up everything for the interview. Interesting solo. Interesting sound. Tell me a little bit about what you were using there and the equipment. You're using the Ibanez?
Actually, on that was recorded before I was with Ibanez. I was using a different bass. That was actually a P bass.
Oh, wow.
That I played for a while back when I was endorsed by Fender a long time ago. And pretty much, I think it was pretty much a flat EQ on that, I believe. I might have EQ'd it after the fact, but a lot of stuff I do like that, especially recordings where I'll use my EBS compressor pedal and EBS multidrive and then set them pretty flat to like 12 o'clock. And what's great with that, the compression, you can't really hear. It's really... you know, a lot of compression. To me, you can hear the compression with the
right.
With the EBS, you can crank it, and it doesn't sound like it. The tone is compressed at all. But it really helps to give it a push and keep it together a little bit. And especially when you use overdrive, the sound tends to go in many different directions, and some of the harmonics can be too loud or something. You know, so it evens it out a little bit. And then with the multi-drive, it has different settings. You can overdrive the whole tone, or you can overdrive over 350. So that's what the normal setting will give you. It'll overdrive frequencies over 350. So you leave the low end untouched, and it's kind of like an old trick, really. But the way that EBS designed their equipment, it really the quality of the tone and the quality of the products are amazing.
That's interesting how they were able to keep the low end clean without that's interesting to actually do a frequency based distortion. But mm-hmm. that makes sense because it gives you that growl, but you still get that low end punch.
Yeah.
You know, and as we play the clips, there's a few clips that we have to play tonight. Keep in mind, I want to ask you too in your approach and how you play, but also we were talking earlier before the show, how do you cut through a wall of guitars when you have like these guys, you know, fully blown out Marshalls going at it and full, you know, drums everywhere? Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see how, you know, where's your niche in the arrangement, how you, and also too how that applies recording as opposed to live. Yeah. Now in this recording that we just played, that was direct, or did you use an amp?
But it's been a long time. I believe that was direct. I might have used an EBS HD350 head as well, and that's got built-in compression. And what I normally do, I boost a little bit in the mid range, and that's sort of whether it's in the studio or live. That's to me the secret of a bass player to cut through is to work with the mid range, whether it's mm-hmm. the punch in the low 300-400 hertz, or you go and you want more of the string brightness up in 2 or 3 K. But typically, I'm somewhere in the middle, and that's sort of why I bring out a little more of the growl and the punch and the because the brightness, really, if you're by yourself and you play solo, you can hear that. But when once the loud guitars and the cymbals and all that come in, you know, your strength is not going to be the brightness to me. The strength for the bass player is going to be in the mid range. So
right, well, that's the thing with the cymbals. You're going to lose all that top end from the bass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have an EBS system here that we're using. Now, that when you said you were using the EBS, would you use that as a preamp in direct, or did you actually mic that with a cabinet if you would use it?
Typically a direct, and it has actually in the balanced output, it has a speaker simulator button too.
Cool.
So it kind of gives you the characteristics of miking a speaker. So that's kind of a really nice thing to have, and same thing when you're sending your direct signal to the board when you play live, to use that as kind of like gives it more of a little warmer tone, a little different characteristic.
You have an EBS here. Tell us a little bit about this amp, and then I'd like you to demonstrate that type of growl and sound you're talking about since mm-hmm. you have the bass here. And this is direct. He's using this amp with the direct into the board here. So go ahead and explain what you're using and also the pedals that you're using.
Right. This is a Raidmar 750 head, which is 750 watts. It's really loud. It's really small. It's really light. I don't even know how much it weighs, but not very much at all. And you can basically put it in your backpack and fly with it and put it on top of it.
Yeah, it looks like a laptop, a thick laptop. That's not that big.
Yeah. So it's sweet. It's got built-in compression, just like all their heads, and then has built-in overdrive, which most of their heads have as mm-hmm. well. So the model that came before this, if I remember correctly, doesn't have the built-in overdrive. So that was a 250-watt head, I think. It looks mm-hmm. the same, but this is a lot louder.
You know? Now, are you using the overdrive there, or are you using a pedal to do the overdrive?
I'm using a little bit of both, actually. So without the pedal, I got a little bit of overdrive in the amp, and with the pedal, you know, that's where more of the growl is. So it's a combination, really, and the EQ set pretty flat except for the mid-range is boosted mm-hmm. quite a bit.
Oh, okay. And then, so go ahead and just give us a little bit of, demonstrate that type of growl that you're talking about.
So, you know, I'm digging in quite a bit on the strings, and it works with that tone, and the compression sort of holds back the, you know, the peaks and the all that stuff. So,
but, and I can see that it's not, the notes are pretty consistent. It's not popping out, and, you know, certain notes popping out more than others.
Right.
And that's the compressor keeping it smooth.
Totally, because especially the harmonics sometimes can really pop if you're not careful. And what I've done here, I used to put the compression first and then the overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
But now I switched it, and it really kind of holds it together a little tighter.
A little better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I noticed, too, that also, too, you're not using a lot of distortion. It seems like it's just enough. Like, if the amp was turned up, you know, you're running it fairly clean, but when you dug in, it started blooming a little bit.
Right.
So your settings on your pedals, you're not using terribly a lot of distortion, right? Just a little bit?
It's a little bit. It's I'm looking at it right now. It's actually right at 12 o'clock, and to me, it gives it just enough of a growl. I mean, if I was going to play a solo or something, maybe I'll crank it a little bit more. But that's pretty much my tone. And if I fly in and do a fly gig where I don't have my amp with me, which now I really don't have any excuses anymore, but with this head. But so now the overdrive on the amp is down, so it would be more kind of like that on a head that I would be using.
Now you play hard. You dig into the guitar. Now just for a second, play the bass just light. You know, like a light part. It's really clean,
yeah.
Considering you have distortion on there.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing.
And I tend to not pluck the strings too hard, but I do. You can the whole thing with that is you want to pluck the string so it's moving up and down. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you're plucking it into the fret, and you're killing a lot of the low end that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets really rattly, and especially it's hard to record a bass tone like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me play another clip, and I want to go through a little bit of your approach of how you find the pocket for you in the song. And I'm going to play the next one is another one from Soul Sign. It's called Life. And I edited a couple of the sections together so you can hear what he's doing. He does some interesting lines. But it's really, you know, the bass is out there, but it's not like it blends in. It's you can hear it, but it in the overall mix, it's right there. I mean, it's really clear. So you take a listen and then tell me I'm curious what your approach was in setting up your part, writing your part for the song, and where, you know, how to fit in and the things that you were looking at in terms of doing your arrangement of it, you know, with the guitars and all the other stuff that was coming in. And then I notice also too, you really do sync well with the drum, the kick drum a lot, which is very cool.
Cool.
So here's, let me play Life and we'll talk a little more about that. Now, there's a lot of interesting things you're doing in there. I mean, some of it's, you know, you're keeping the root down there and you're mm-hmm. but kind of let's go through a little bit of that, what you were doing, because it's clear, but it's not in the way. And there's a lot of stuff in there. There's those two guitars, the vocals, and the drums are all, I mean, it's a big sound. Can you kind of go through it, just kind of remember in your head what the challenges were on that song?
Well, to be honest with you, I wrote it on bass. So the drummer,
oh, wow.
So I even played it probably like that before whatever I gave to the drummer, and he's just kind of following the bass, really.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a little of both too, where I sort of, you know, obviously locked in with him when he was recording. So we were recording the bass and the drums together.
Okay.
So and then, you know, after that, I wrote the lyrics and the vocal melody, and then after that, I came up with the now the introduction guitar. So I'm playing that, and I'm playing some of the other leads too, but a lot of the leads were played, most of them, by Rob Math, is his
mm-hmm.
name,
mm-hmm.
Great player, and yeah, he did an amazing job on that. So,
well, so back when you were writing the song, early on, you were doing those dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, because he's doing that on the kick drum,
mm-hmm.
so you had, that was part of the original, the main sketch, and when you did that, you had all of those rhythmic things.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then there's a part where I edited in where there's an edit, and you start doing all these like little lines. You do this whole you're doing a bunch of little interesting things there.
Yeah,
that was very, very cool. But I mean, it works, and again, it gives that moment, but it's not in the way. It's how was that difficult keeping it, or you told everybody specifically, you know, where to keep the holes. Was there a hole there for you to do that, or did, because I mean, it doesn't clash with any of the other stuff, though they're playing other things, there's other things going on in there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, a lot of times I don't think and analyze stuff too much. It just kind of comes natural, most of those things, and during a guitar solo, obviously I feel like I have more freedom to go a little bit more crazy, and I also feel like I need to fill the space a little bit more, because we're not using any keyboards, and the guitars are basically the rhythm guitars were very basic, you know,
mm-hmm.
Chords and stuff like that. So, kind of just part of it is just, you know, to fill the space basically, and so it just was more of a natural thing for me to do, I think.
Now, let me ask you, doing that song live, I mean, that was well, first of all, in recording that, you ran, I presume you ran that direct with an amp, with the amp head, or did you run that, did you mic that?
That was, actually, I got to be honest with you, now that I think of it, this one song was one of the few songs that I actually retracked a bass
mm-hmm.
On, actually. I kept most of the bass tracks that I played with the drummer. Somehow this one, can't remember why, it was probably maybe not played great, or the tone wasn't right, or something like that. So,
but you ran, you were going direct, right? Whether you used the amp,
yeah,
the amp in there.
Oh yeah, this one was definitely not, because I remember retracking, it was not mic'd. But the head, I think I was using the head and pedals actually
mm-hmm.
on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So the tone mainly came from that, and I try to get my EQ all good to go, and so I don't have to do too much tweaking in the mix.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about doing that live. Do you have to change? I mean, is there your approach to it, is it different, or are you able to pretty much keep the same? You know, I mean, obviously you're using the amp, but I mean, you got speakers. But is there other challenges, or is it harder to keep? How do you punch out and stay clear, you know, through the mix in the live audience? You know, is there a challenge to that, or is it the way the arrangement, does it allow the bass to come out naturally, or do you have issues?
I kind of probably go a little more crazy live, because I feel like it's live, and I also, there's a lot of times, you know, it's like during there's less guitars, there's less guitar overdubs, there's only one guitarist in the band in Soul Sign, so I probably go a little bit more aggressive with the overdrive and the tone as well, where I probably tweak the mid-range even more, I think.
A trio, the group is a trio.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so you're doing, yeah. like a, you're you might be doing more rhythm bass, as I guess you would call it, where you're covering for the second guitar, for the rhythm guitar?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Probably more chords, where on a recording I may not be playing chords in some places.
Okay.
And live I, you know, tend to go a little more crazy.
Now, on stage, what cabinets? Do you use 10s? Do you use 12s? Do you use 15s? What do you...
More 10s has been my favorite thing. I'm not opposed to 15s and 12s either. But
do you get enough bottom end from the 10s?
I do. I typically use the A10 cabinets and sometimes the 410s, you know, mm-hmm. and EBS preferably, you know, as often as I can, or as often as I have access to them.
Mm-hmm.
Know,
mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it seemed to work. And I think with the 10s, they have a lot of punch and they react quick, so it's it works well for me.
And you can hear them well. I mean, they're short. We were talking about bigger speakers, like we were talking about 18s, which give you a lot of low end, but their throw is like 18, 20 feet out, so you won't hear it on stage. You'll hear it out front, but you don't hear it. But those 10s give you a good, like a monitor.
Really, yeah.
Monitor mix.
So absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, let's play one more clip from Soul Sign, and this is Sign Up Your Soul. Let's take a listen, and then let's go through a little bit of what you're doing in there.
Okay.
Here's Sign Up Your Soul. I'm sorry.
The candle flickers. My body shivers. I can feel your presence. You are near. Is there any matter where you are? Is there time perception when I talk to you? Wisdom I will find always on my mind. The sign of your soul. No, no, no. Where are you now? No, no. Where are you now? No.
Now, was that a song that you had written first with the bass and the drums? Is that similar to the other one? So
yeah.
You had done that. And then because I noticed that in this one, the guitar doubles some of the
right.
bass lines. But then you do those climbs up where you start going up, the inversions, all that stuff.
Right.
And then you hit that really cool chord.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that was actually tracked with the drums, and then, I mean, the song was written before, and we actually played the song a long time ago live, and
mm-hmm.
Mainly I wrote pretty much 90% of the music, but yeah, it was interesting in that song is when on the recording, you know, the bass goes up, and the guitar is descending, right? But then live, there's no rhythm guitar in the solo, so then what I do the you know, the combination of the guitar and the bass at the same time. And
right.
And that stuff is kind of fun. You know, I steal a lot of stuff from Billy Sheehan with the tapping and all that uh-huh. stuff. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because, yeah, you have to function as sometimes kind of like a rhythm guitarist while still keeping the bottom end.
Yeah.
And then that riff that the guitar doubles with you, that's a really cool, that's a very cool riff that you're running in there, too.
Yeah, so what I'm doing, I'm hitting like the octave at the same time, and I'm pulling the low one with a thumb and then the high one with my ring finger, like that. So it's like gives it a fatter.
Well, you get that octave like that you would get from the guitar that's doubling. But right. I noticed that it just punches. It's real solid. And then when the lead was coming in with the wah and stuff like that, that bass was still. And then you start you start doing that stuff, yeah. And it's really punching. It's really in the mix. It's up front.
Thanks.
And but live now, would you do octaves there, or would you still just do the single note to get it fuller?
Oh, on the no, I'm doing these throughout the whenever that riff is in the song, I play that the same way during the solo as well. Yeah, so. Probably all, and that came from playing it as a trio live. You know, I just wanted to mm-hmm. fill more space and, you know, and sort of the aggressiveness of that sound, too.
Have you played in a dual guitar band?
Yes, I have many
now,
times.
Now, how's that, as a bass player, how does that change things around? And also, too, if you've played in a group where there is guitars and keyboards, how mm-hmm. does that affect what you do?
Well, that's interesting because, for example, when I played with Yngwie, there was just obviously one guitar playing keyboards. And a lot of times, and the same thing with Dio Disciples, and the keyboard and the guitar is doing different things. And I don't feel like we're getting in each other's way. It's more like it every instrument has this great function, you know, so it's really cool. I like that a lot.
Because I've noticed in some, you know, groups, I mean, I listen to a lot of prog rock and stuff, and the keyboards get pretty deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll get those full pads, and they get down there, and they get into your range, and, you know, it's interesting. I mean, that can get in the way sometimes.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, the low notes on the keyboard, and most really great keyboard players, I've been lucky. I played with some really good ones, and they understand that concept. They lay off on the bass notes when needed, so it hasn't really been an issue. You know, sometimes it's kind of cool when they double the bass too,
right?
So
or they'll use a pedal and then you can play. You mm-hmm. know, that you they'll hit a low note and hold it, and you're like doing some stuff on the top or something like that,
right? It's so. Like when we play Heaven and Hell, it's like there's a real low bass note in the keyboard, and it sounds great. It's really mm-hmm. fat. Mm-hmm. You know? It cuts down deeper than the bass would, so it really helps to lift that whole thing.
Now, but with two guitar players, do you find yourself having to play less, or does it matter?
Yes, sometimes, because there's too much going on. And the biggest problem I've had with two guitar players, sometimes I had to tell them, like, listen, guys, there's two of you now. You need to be either half of your normal volume or one guy 80% and one guy 20%. Mm-hmm. And I like those kind of dynamics when one guitar's loud and one guitar's not. Then it really, to me, has a great function.
Mm-hmm.
When guitar players understand that concept. Unfortunately, not all of them do. So.
But also, too, in your playing, do you get the chance to use the dynamics where you play real light and then go real, then dig in? I mean, do you get that? Because the genre, the music is usually just balls out, you know, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
But do you find yourself able to do those type of dynamic changes and, you know, play something delicate and then really go for it?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I there's a lot of dynamics in most the bands I play with. Tony McAlpine especially uses mm-hmm. a lot of dynamics. And same thing in Dio Disciples, too. It's and Soul Sign. There's a lot of room for that, and I like that, and I like to if I'm able to use dynamics and it's called for, I try to do as much as possible. You know, you kind of lay back a little bit on the verses and try mm-hmm. to dig in a little bit more on the choruses, sort of like a natural thing to do.
Because there was that one piece, I think it was Life, where it had, there was one part where it gets really quiet and you're playing pretty clean. Mm-hmm. The bass is just pretty resonant and just very light. And then you go back in and you guys go at it. But it's very, you know, it's a much quieter sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting tone, because you can hear that. It's interesting because you're growling all the time on the bass and you can hear it, but then there's some of these other parts and it's a really solid, but it's it doesn't sound dirty. That's what blows me away, because you're using distortion. Yeah. But I hear the bass and it really doesn't, it's pretty clean. I mean, it's you're getting the solid low end, but it's not, you know, to me, like playing, like when you listen to like somebody like Jack Bruce, mm-hmm. when he's just running the Marshall full blown, he wasn't getting a lot of depth.
And, yeah.
You know, it just got this like mid rangey thing, almost like a little bit lower guitar than what Clapton was doing. And it's just the physics of the amp. It wasn't, he right. wasn't able to get the, you know, part of it was the technology back then, but
yeah.
It was interesting, you know, mm-hmm. but you get that full sound. It's still deep, and it still gives that root. And the other thing too is you always, the way you sync with the kick drum. That's really, that's kind of, it's because you hit those, like he's using a double kick drum, right?
No, actually, that was single kick everything, I believe. Let me think. Yeah.
So he's doing those like little double lines on there, but you follow him and it's nice. It's interesting. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Were you talking about Soul Sign now, right? Or were you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm going to play Buck Welder in a minute. And,
okay.
Actually, I'm going to go ahead. Let's go ahead to that now. And I'm going to play a clip. And this is the Night of New Moon. And tell me a little bit about this band and the difference between this and in terms of your playing and stuff and the whole sound from Soul Sign.
Very different, actually, because a lot of the music is double kick and it's fast. It's more progressive. And there's not a whole lot of room to do crazy bass lines. So I'm following the guitar and the drums a lot, mm-hmm. you know. And so it's very different.
Okay, let me play this clip, Night of the New Moon, and we'll talk more about that. Here we go. Now, that kick drum, he's doing those little, they're not triplets or quadruplets or something.
Right. Oh, he's incredible. Achilles Priester, and he, I played with him in Tony McAlpine's band, too. So, mm-hmm. yeah, he's.
So, now, bass-wise, how do you approach that? So, are you following that, or are you playing less when he's doing those type of fast, are you are you doing that on the bass?
Yeah, I'm following most of it, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. And it also comes from the three finger, which I also stole from Billy Sheehan. And playing with three fingers, you can play twice as fast, basically. And I can, instead of supposed to two fingers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're doing like a triplet.
Yeah, so. You know, so you can play very fast, and in a music in a band like this, it comes in really handy.
So, play me the bass line of that where he's doing that where you're following that kick drum, where you're doing. He's doing that kind of a thing.
I'm not sure which one that was. Are you talking about the?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm using the, I'm playing the low octave and then the high octave, and do just to kind of accent the, you know, more,
yeah,
more, what can I say, more prominently, yeah.
Right. And then that's two guitarists? Or one guitar?
That's one guitar player, and he has, you know, done some overdubs, but there's one guitar player in the band.
Okay.
So it's Andrew Stooge. He's really a really great player and a great guy. And
now,
great
what writer. Happens live? What for you? I mean, now that's one guitar, just one guitar out there.
Right.
I mean, he's doing a lot on that cut. That's the studio cut. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
So what happens? Do you do more chords? Do you do more?
That's a good question. We actually,
'cause you're doing a lot of stuff as it is, but
yeah,
how would you do that and make it fuller?
I would probably maybe work with my tone a little bit more, maybe change some of my parts, and then let the keyboards fill a lot of the
There's keyboards on there.
Yeah, too. And to fill a lot of the stuff that the guitar overdubs and kind of mimic that. So combination actually of a lot of stuff, but a lot of it is fast, like 16th notes that are following the drums. You know, so there's a lot of that going on. So
and you're still being what I'm amazed at, because part of what, you know, when you're using low frequencies, maybe it's just because I'm slow, but to get that kind of fast, especially on the lower strings,
it also comes from plucking the string upwards, because if you start plucking it hard in, now you're hitting the pickup and the strings keep hitting the frets and you just lose the punch.
So you're using your fingers, not the thumb, when you're doing that.
Right.
Because what is impressing me is the articulation. You're still getting it, and it, you know, low basses are not known for their dexterity in terms of, you know, I mean, yes, you have bass players that are, you know, they're playing, you know, they're popping or snapping and they'll do a lot of fast lines, but to get that type of, especially picking it, where you're not tapping or something like that,
yeah,
that's that articulation, and then to sync it with the drum, I mean, it's, that's not, to me, that's, I mean, for me, yeah, I would think that would be hard to get it that clean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's tricky. It takes practice, you know, and it takes also a lot of experience playing in bands and working with the drummer and playing with, I've been lucky in my years, I played with a lot of great players and a lot of great guitar players as well, so a lot of that comes from, like, you know, them setting the bar high, and like, I got to work really hard to keep up, like when I played with Yngwie Malmsteen, it was like, you know, it's, you know, here we go, boom. And it's just a lot of fast runs and a lot of double kick and you build up your endurance, you know, to last 90 minutes. You have to it's helpful to have a lot of live experience, you know, have an experience of playing clubs for 3-4 hours. It really has helped me when you're playing, like, a, whether it's you know, like a blues for 15 minutes where you go to you know, for, and it really helps your, builds up durability and strength in your hands.
Do you have to do a lot of practicing to keep the dexterity and the endurance up, or is it, you play so much in the gigs, are you okay with that? Because it would seem like that's a lot to get that, keep that endurance, because you're playing pretty fast and you're picking pretty hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, practicing really helps in during the weeks of rehearsals and days of rehearsals when you're going through the songs and you're rehearsing. I try to also play some scales and exercises when I can in between and at home and stuff like that to build that up before a tour. So, yeah, it comes from just doing a lot. And also, like, when you start cramping up, I remember there's a couple of songs I played with Yngwie where it's just like, less than a minute into the song, my hands are completely starting to cramp up, and I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to last for 4 or 5 minutes. But it, it comes down to relaxing, basically. So all you got to tell yourself is relax, relax. So otherwise, you know, very few times in my life where I've had that, where the song is like so fast that I'm basically cramping up. But there was a couple of songs I played with him that were...
Now, with Yngwie, are you doing similar to like what Sheehan would do with like Steve Vai or some of the other players, where he would, you would double what he's doing, or when him, when he's playing all those flurry of notes, would you be doing simpler stuff? When you know, would you stay out of the way and let him just fly?
A lot of those runs I would do with him. If it's that's what's on the album, I would do that. Some of the stuff, I wouldn't play with him. But I mean, a lot of those runs that are actually part of the song where the bass needs to be there.
You would double that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would seem to me sometimes when he's just really going at it, you got to leave him, let him do it. You know what I mean? Just like,
yeah,
give him the space.
Absolutely.
To do that.
And a lot of it is, yeah, I mean, the rest of the band would play different parts, you know, and would not necessarily follow him, especially doing like the solos and stuff like that.
And Yngwie's band, the drummer was a double bass drum?
Yes.
Yeah. So you had more of those quicker notes.
There's a lot of stuff, and there would be songs that were hard to play at the studio tempo, and the drummer sometimes, just to mess with me, would like up the tempo like 20 BPM, and I'd be like, man, you know? So it was all good fun.
And Yngwie had no problem with it going faster.
No, he was fine. Yeah, totally, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the different techniques that you use.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the three fingers, where you do the triplet up pick,
mm-hmm.
you tap harmonics.
Yeah, tapping, harmonics. Do some slapping. I'm not a big slapper, you know. But some of that also crazy stuff goes on.
You don't hear that much in metal. In other things, have you ever had to do a lot of that stuff get more funky?
Sometimes, you know, when I was doing a lot of sessions and playing a lot of different styles, which I still do, but I used to do a lot of pop sessions, stuff like that, then that would be a necessity sometimes.
Yeah. And then also, too, do you ever find yourself in some of the band situations where you're doing, like, little chords high up on the neck?
Mm-hmm.
Do you do a lot? Do you find room for that, or... Or a lot of times you just have to keep, you just got to keep that groove going.
Depending on the song, yeah. I mean, if there's it's just time and place for everything, you know. So, of course, you know, I'm a little bit of a nutty bass player. So, yeah, I love to do that if I can and if it's called for, you know, type of mm-hmm. thing. But I've also learned a long time ago that you need to take it easy and play in a conservative way, because that's a lot of times that's what people want, and that's what what the song is, and especially if it's a famous song that has a specific bass line, you can't go outside of the frame of that, really.
Right. But in your own music, less is more seems to be the norm, then, would you say?
Or I'm pretty actually surprisingly conservative in my own band, even, and I think it's the approach has always been, probably because I'm one of the main writers, I write most of the music, that it's more the approach is to serve the song more than mm-hmm. anything. So, and so there's a little of both. I go crazy sometimes, but surprisingly conservative, a lot of conservative playing, you know.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I'm even surprised by myself, because I have the freedom to do whatever I want, basically. It's my band, more or less my band. I want it to be everybody's band, but... So it's, you know, we try to have fun with the music at the same time, but without going too crazy, and let the song speak for itself, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me a little bit, briefly, your influences, what you used to listen to when you were starting out, and what was a big mm-hmm. influence on your playing musically, and songwriting and bass playing?
Well, good question. There was a lot of influences. In the beginning, I mean, the very first band I listened to was Kiss, probably when I was 4 or 5 years mm-hmm. old. I listened to a lot of top 40 and pop music and when I was really young, like 10, 11, 12. And then I got really heavily into rock and roll and hard rock and metal when I was like 12, 13. And mm-hmm. it was Judas Priest, Iron Maiden,
and AC/DC. Were you living out here, or were you living in Europe? Were you in Europe at that time?
I was in Sweden.
In Sweden.
Yeah. I was there till I was 21. So.
Oh, okay. So what was the music scene back then over there? What was big there?
It was, the same, a lot of the same stuff that was released here was released there. Not necessarily everything, but it was very similar. And it was fun, because back then, you know, people were selling albums, and there was a lot of concerts going on. So we'd take, you know, bus trips to see bands, and, you know, I was mm-hmm. too young to drive when I started going to concerts and shows. So it was fun. As far as the Swedish artists, there's a lot of good players and there was a lot of good bands, but it was hard for the bands to get signed. But basically, each major label division of Europe or Sweden would sign maybe one metal band or one hard rock band. Mm-hmm. So if you were lucky, if they were lucky, maybe four bands got signed out of all the hundreds of bands that were great. So it was a little rough. A lot of people released really nice records on their own and demos and stuff like that. But it was, maybe not very fair to a lot of the bands.
Right.
And they would break in Europe, but then the American division of the record label wouldn't bring them over and promote them in the United States. So that
right.
was, there was a few bands that were successful, but a lot of them never got the break that they, in my opinion, deserved.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you listen to any of the blues-based guys, like Cream or Stones or Zeppelin? Or, I mean, was that an influence as much as, like, I mean, you were, it seems like you got it more into the next generation hard rock where they were playing, you know, like a Van Halen or Yngwie and stuff like that. But did you listen to the more blues stuff?
I did. I was at first more introduced to the traditional metal, melodic metal, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, and Steve Harris, of course, was a big influence. And I later on got into Deep Purple, Whitesnake, and after that, Led Zeppelin bands, like the older bands, and Cream and so forth. And then I discovered Jack Bruce and those guys. But I discovered Billy Sheehan before those guys, and he was he's very influenced by
those people.
He grew up with those guys. So I probably learned indirectly a lot of stuff through him that he, you know, copied from Chris Squire and Jack Bruce and these guys. So but when I started listening to like Led Zeppelin and I discovered John Paul Jones, I was like, wow. What a bass player. So that was an eye-opener, and it's so versatile, and everything he does is incredible.
Well, what he did when he synchronized with Bonham was always genius to me. But but then coming here, now you were 21 when you came to America, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? How was the music scene different for you? Was that a major change, or was it not too big of a deal? Or
it was a major change, but I came at a really strange, depressing time. In 1993, and the grunge had broken through, and the Sunset Strip was like dead, basically. And it's a very difficult time for people that were playing the type of music I was playing. So it was very interesting. And I was lucky to get a break and to play with the Quiet Riot in 94, like a year and a half after I arrived. So that was a good thing for me, but I saw a lot of people just basically saying forget it, and they, you know, people that came from Europe, or, you know, they would basically return back home, and some of them became really successful, like my friends in the band Hammerfall, and I'm very happy for them. They deserve it, and they just basically said, a couple of them were here, and I became friends with them, and they were like, we're not going to do anything here, there's nothing going on, and they were right, and they made the right move. So,
but there was a, to me, there was a big scene from Sweden. There was a lot of good musicians come out of that have came out of Sweden.
Absolutely,
it was definitely a scene there. I mean, there is a legacy of a lot of the metal and rock stuff that I've heard from as Swedish artists. So,
yeah,
it seems like that was an important part of. I mean, it's interesting because there's these little niches that were different places, and I remember what you're saying about 1993. Though a lot of the rock bands were touring the Midwest at that time that I had heard, they were making a living just touring the festivals and stuff like that, and they could actually, they were just going around and round and around playing out there.
There was a lot of venues, I remember that, and when I toured with Quiet Riot, I remember we played like 11 places in Texas alone. I mean, Texas is a big state, but there was a lot of venues, and I just don't see that anymore in the same way that, you know, a lot of them are gone, you know, but...
Yeah, no, that's true. It's changed. But back then, you could actually, you'd play some of these festivals, outdoor festivals, but there was a lot of people, and, you know, it was a living. It was, you could make some decent money.
Yeah.
It was pretty interesting.
Very much.
I told you we'd go by fast. We're already out of time. Do you want to, first of all, let's let everybody know, www.bjornenglund.com is his website. all the information about him. He talks about gear, gigs. You can keep, you know, check on him. And also he's on Facebook. Anything coming up new that's happening? What's happening with you in terms of concerts? Were you playing locally or around the United States? And any new? Are you working on a new album?
We're working on a new Soul Sign album. And so that's in the works. And we've taken a little bit of a break because of various reasons. But we're working on a new one, and we're writing for a third one even.
So, cool. Very cool.
But we got to finish the second one first. And I got a couple of shows with Dio Disciples in a couple of weeks coming up in Europe. We're playing the Fiesen Festival on August 4th, and we're playing the Wacken on August 6th. And after that, we got some more shows coming up in the fall in the U.S., and
As Dio Disciples?
As Dio Disciples, yeah. And it looks like we might be doing some stuff with Tona McAlpine as well in the fall.
So, okay. Anything with Blackwelder?
Blackwelder, we're looking more at 2017 at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's more to even... So yeah. The two bands, Soul Sign and Blackwelder, there's more coming.
There's more coming, both of them. Absolutely, yeah. And then Blackwelder's looking at another album, too. When, I'm not sure, but... That will be happening as well. So,
okay,
that'll be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, I just want to thank you, and obviously, we'll have to have you back. You're going to be gone for a while, but when these new albums come into fruition, we definitely have to have you back and talk more.
Okay.
It's a real pleasure. Do you want to play something to take us out, or do you want? I have one more clip in her voice. What would you prefer?
I can play a little. My hands are really cold, but I'll try. I'll give it a shot.
Okay. So I'm going to let him do a little solo here. Everybody have a great week, and we'll see you next week. But check this out. This is very cool.